My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Well done, Anthony. Well done. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Stream me live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. It is 5 o'clock on a Tuesday, which means it's time, plus you knew it from the air horns, for a Tischler Tuesday. That's today's Not My Beat.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
Mitchell, how are you, my friend?
I am doing fantastic. Great job with the air horns. That was well done.
Anthony, anything you'd like to say?
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Okay. That was better than last week.
I mean, what could be worse? Although I still am kind of impressed that Anthony found the equivalent of a practice is over air horn. That still is just an unbelievable find. If you were looking for it, the fact that you found it by accident is kind of mind numbing. The other thing that we need to do from like a business standpoint, Mitch, is we need to find we need to start collecting some Tischler clips for an hour opener. Like Phillips is a regular guest, has one. Standig has some from his time on the show as a regular. We got a couple other folks that have kind of their signature. Hey, this hour so-and-so is coming on. So we can't really try for it, but we have to be on our P's and Q's to say, hey, let's cut that. Let's make that an hour open for Mitch Tischler.
I got you.
I will try to do as many viral clips as I can. How about that?
You can't try. They just have to happen. But I have faith in us, Mitch. I have faith. Okay, let's get to the football, shall we? The question I'm basically going to ask you every week on Tuesday to get started. It just is a jumping off point. We now have had time to digest. We've watched whatever tape we're going to watch. We've heard some of the participants talk, including Dan Quinn, in a Monday after he's watched the tape. As you think back to the weekend, what's the thing that you're still thinking about, whether it's a good thing, a bad thing, or I'm kind of really interested in watching this thing?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think you have to start with the good thing, which is the fact that the offense ran up 425 yards. Jaden Daniels led a 2-minute drive for a win, in his first opportunity to really run one of those in game. And to me, obviously the touchdown situation is not ideal, but at the same time, it's kind of a double-edged sword because they did move the ball. Both games, they've moved the ball very well on offense. Jaden looks good. I thought he looked a little better in the passing game this week than he did last week. So I think that's the kind of positive side of it. You have to look as you talk about this win.
No, I agree with you. So I haven't had a chance to talk about the red zone stuff today. So let's dive in there. What is your hypothesis on what happened in the red zone on Sunday?
Yeah, I think early on they struggled because, everything gets sped up in the red zone. Everything's a lot quicker. Jaden's dealing with a defense that wasn't really bringing a ton of pressure. They were kind of sitting back and trying to force him to do something. But ultimately, one of the things that I kind of took away from it was the fact that the Giants couldn't kick field goals, I think, affected kind of the play calling in the red zone. Because you knew any time you were able to put points on the board, you were making it that much more difficult for the Giants, knowing that they weren't able to do that on the other side. So I think as the game kind of kept going, I thought they got a little more conservative in the red zone than maybe they would have been. Nonetheless, all the penalties, which is a whole other issue to discuss. But I think they kind of set themselves up and recognized that, you know, kicking a bunch of field goals was going to probably be enough to win this football game. And ultimately, you know, it was.
Yeah, I think that's great perspective, because one of the things that we talked about on Take Command this morning when Logan and I were talking about it was just how conservative the calls were down there. And I think a couple of things happened. I think, one, they're still slowly taking off the training wheels of the drop back game. And the most dangerous place you have drop back, you know, issues is the red zone, because the space is so tight. And how many, I mean, just watch red zone this Sunday. Anybody who is not going to be watching the Commanders, because, well, they don't play till Monday night, watch red zone, watch how many red zone interceptions there are. There's a ton, because the space is super tight. Quarterbacks have to force balls in tight windows. And Jaden Daniels is a rookie through two games, has zero interceptions. And that's part of the reason why. And then, Mitch, I think one of the other things too is the Giants did a really good job defending the quarterback run game. And I think that is going to be such a big part of how they score down there, that between the penalties and a good job on a couple of key snaps by the Giants, and then you combine that with the conservative nature of the calls. And I think that's probably a smart point that you made about why they might have been so conservative. Like, and that way, that's the explanation. Not saying that that's actually a good thing. Hey, seven field goals, cool. But I'd rather have seven field goals and win than, oh, well, they went 6 of 7. And that one interception, that really cost them.
Sure, but you go back to last week, and they kicked both field goals, and they made both field goals, he would have led 5 of 8 scoring drives. And then you look at what they did this week, where they didn't have to punt. You know, if we're talking about this season through the lens of how does Jaden look, I think that you can't be anything but happy with what you've seen through the first 2 weeks. I mean, the only ball that he's really put in peril was the throw over to Zach Ertz, who just made an incredible play to rip the ball out of the defender's hands. But, you know, other than a kneel down at the end of the first half, they scored every drive. And to me, that's a pretty big plus when you're looking at, you know, big picture, what you're hoping to see from Jaden as the season continues.
Yeah, used to be number 5 on the field bad, now number 5 on the field good. That's, you know, all due respect to Tress. That's just math, Mitch.
Yeah, and listen, Tress wasn't wearing 5 and he didn't get a chance to see the field.
Nope.
Always a good thing, right?
But you should have switched to number 10 sooner. In hindsight, if that's all we needed, okay then. Mitch Tischler, Beltway Football Podcast with us here on the Hoffman Show. A couple more things on the offense, and let's dive into the defense, because that is, of course, the source of much consternation around command land. On the offensive line, Mitch, Brandon Coleman, another up-and-down day. The line overall, I think, did some really nice things. But how do you, like, what do you make of how they're handling getting Coleman involved? And if you're them, do you continue with that experiment, or do you look at the way Korn has played and go, maybe Big Luke is just going to have to do fine for right now?
No, I think they're going to continue rotating Brandon Coleman in. One of the questions I want to ask of Cliff and Dan this week is how comfortable they are with what they've seen from Brandon Coleman, and if they are comfortable, because last week Cliff Kingsbury did say they want to get to a point where they have kind of consistent starting five. Are you comfortable with Brandon Coleman at that left tackle? And if so, do you start working some right side in for Cornelius Lucas in practice? Because, you know, Andrew Wiley has been not good. He's been not good in the pass game, but good in the run game. So, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword there too. But I think ultimately Brandon Coleman within the next week or two takes over, you know, I don't want to say all of the reps, but the vast, vast majority of them. And quite frankly, had he not gotten banged up a little bit early in the game on Sunday against the Giants, I think we would have seen more snaps from him and fewer from Cornelius Lucas. And so, you know, Brandon Coleman is going to have some up and downs. He's still going through his kind of preseason, his first look at, you know, NFL defenses and the speed of the game and all the things that, you know, you always talk about with a rookie. But, you know, his ability to get downfield and help out in the short passing game and screen game is just such an advantage to have. And I think that Cliff Kingsbury and Dan Quinn, you know, look at that and see that and recognize, you know, what he can bring to this offense and how much he can help turn a 10-yard play into a 50-yard play because of his ability to get down and pick off a DB.
They also were super realistic about their own limitations in a way that previous staffs have not been. And maybe it's in part because some of these players they picked are some of these players that they're playing, although a lot of it's around Jaden and Coleman, who they did select, but like they're not as blind to the talent as maybe some previous regimes that were like, oh, this guy's going to be awesome. It's like, yeah, but he's a rookie. He's not awesome yet. You have to plan for that. You have to be realistic with that. And I think they've done a good job with that, limiting Jaden maybe almost too much through two games. And they started to open it up a little bit as the game went on Sunday. And I think Coleman probably plays a role in that. I do want to double click on your Wiley point, though, because I do really like that. What have you made of Wiley? Because there is, like, people want to look at when he gets beat, and it's really easy to, and be like, that guy sucks. But realistically, there's also some stuff that he's doing that's really, really good and really high level, especially in the run game. How do you evaluate that right side of the line so far this season, specifically Wiley?
Yeah, I mean, that was probably one of Sam Cosmi's poorest games, and he still did pretty well outside of the penalty situation that they were in and that he was in. But with Wiley, you know, I think what you said is an important point, that this staff has a self-recognition of kind of what they can do, you know, now versus what they ultimately want to be able to do. And you see in, you know, more obvious passing downs, them sending Austin Ekeler over to the right to help pick up, you know, to help Wiley out, to help get a chip. They're lining up tight ends over there to help him out. It's just so obvious when Wiley gets beat, because he gets beat to the inside far too easily and far too often. And when that happens, that rusher gets a free run at Jaden. And it's just so obvious that, you know, Wiley, you know, made a mistake or you know, overset kind of whatever the technical issue is for why that happens. And but he's done well in the run game. And, you know, as much as you want to complain about, you know, the sacks and pressures and, you know, the penalties and the false starts and stuff, this team ran for 200-plus yards and averaged more than 6 yards on the ground. You know, that's a recipe that kind of no matter who you play, you're going to have a chance to win if you're able to kind of dominate like that. And for all the consternation about this offensive line as a whole and what they're going to look like, you know, running for 215, regardless of who it's against, you know, means something. And you have to kind of tip your cap to them for how they're able to road grade like that. And when you look at the Jaden sacks, you know, there were, I think he got sacked 5 times, and 2 of them I counted were kind of O-line mistakes / you know, issues. And 3 of them were him not quite getting rid of the ball quick enough. And, you know, I think on Sunday against the Giants, he showed a little bit of kind of that Sam Howell stuff that we saw last year, where he really wanted to make a big play and danced around the pocket a little more than maybe he could have or should have. And he could have gotten rid of the ball either early to a running back or, you know, thrown it away and lived to fight another day. So these are all, you know, growing points for Jaden and things that he's going to learn. And I think, you know, a lot of these rookie QBs come in after dominating college and being the most athletic person on the field. And all of a sudden, you know, you're used to being able to do all those things. I think on Sunday night, you saw that with Caleb Williams a fair amount. So it's just the point that these guys are going to grow and continue to grow. But ultimately, you know, I think the O-line has done a pretty good job through 2 weeks. And, you know, I think there's obviously room for improvement, but at the end of the day, I think you can't be too harsh on the group as a whole.
No, and, you know, I know it is the Giants, but that's a good front seven, like a really good front seven. Bobby Okereke's real good. Micah McFadden's real good. And Dexter Lawrence is one of the 2 or 3 best defensive tackles in the entire league. And they ran for 200 yards and largely did a really good job on Lawrence inside. So I think they deserve a ton of credit for that. Even if, like you said, there's some other things where you're like, okay, well, let's continue to work on that, continue to clean that up as the year goes. Mitch Tischler, co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast with us here on the Hoffman Show. Okay, Mitch, other side of the ball. That's where things get interesting. I'm sure you and JP talked about Allen and Payne. Where are y'all at on, and where are you at on what these guys are being asked to do and how they're doing it?
Right. I think that's the important thing about what they're being asked to do and how they're doing it. We heard a lot from the coaching staff during training camp and preseason about it, how we want those guys to put their heads down and go after the ball. But I think you're seeing them kind of eating up blocks a little bit, particularly in the run game. I think you see those guys kind of welcoming those doubles to clear up the run space for Lubu and Bobby Wagner. And early on in that game, I think you saw, you know, that kind of play out pretty nicely, because both Frankie and Bobby had, you know, nice defensive plays either at the line of scrimmage or just behind it, because they were able to run free. The other side of that is, you got to see these guys in the box score more than they are. I mean, they are two of your highest paid players, and, you know, you talk about on the other side of the ball, you know, how good Dexter Lawrence was and how much, you know, the Commanders' offense had to plan for Dexter Lawrence, and I think you saw in the blocking scheme they weren't going to let Dexter beat them. If you have John and Duran, who are two guys who are should be thought of in the same ilk as Dexter Lawrence, Daron Payne didn't have a stat, and John Allen had two shared tackles, which isn't enough from the two of them. And more so in the passing game, this is two straight weeks now that they haven't been able to get after the quarterback or get the guy down. And quite frankly, I think that issue is leading to a lot of the issues in the secondary as well, because this defense is designed for those guys to the secondary to kind of be in one-on-ones. And part of it is there are extra bodies available to get after the quarterback. And when they don't get there, those guys have to cover longer, guys come open. You know, there are a bunch of issues. Think about all those crossing routes from
neighbors.
Neighbors.
Yeah.
If you can get John and Duran to put a little pressure up the middle, you know, get Daniel Jones or whatever quarterback it is to move off his spot and not be able to sit there and just look freely over the middle of the field, I think that looks a lot differently. And so, you know, I need to see more from those two guys. Those two guys are making too much money, are too big a part of what this defensive plan is to have as little impact as they're having.
I think that's really well put. They're being asked to do stuff that's hard. Eating double teams is hard and it sucks. And being primary pass rushers as internal guys when the other team isn't particularly scared of the edges is hard. And especially when there's probably going to be a lot of quick losses for you on the outside. But they also, like, with all of that said, they just need to be better. They need to figure out how to eat the double teams better and make the holes a yard, 2 yards narrower for Wagner and Luvu to fill and Chin to fill. And then the other thing, too, is if they can just sustain some of this on the outside and not have to have the extra resources dedicated to the box, or that they can dedicate extra resources to the box. Like, that geometry change, I think, will help them a lot, Mitch. And I'm very curious to see what kind of tolerance they have moving forward, like what kind of risk tolerance they have in the back end moving forward. Like, in the fourth quarter, they just were like, we're going to play cover two because Malik Nabers is killing us and we can't afford to be man-to-man or have a single person responsible for him. And we need bodies. And are they going to continue to do that? Or are they going to get back to what they want to be and live with a little bit of risk on the outside and hope that, you know, whoever is playing corner opposite of St. Juice and St. Juice pick up their game, or in Ben's case, continue to pick up his game a little bit?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, Benjamin St. Juice gets a lot of hate, I guess, you know, for his play. He played pretty well on Sunday. I mean, aside from the forced the punch out, the forced fumble, he was solid. And when they started kind of having him be the guy to cover Malik Nabers, you saw his Malik Nabers production kind of work its way down. So I was pleased with what I saw from Benjamin St. Juice on that side of the field. As you talk about getting out to the quarterback, you know, the interior guys are the guys that are paid and you need to see more from. But the guys on the edges also, I mean, you know, Dorrance Armstrong had 8 sacks last year in Dallas in limited work. We haven't seen him beat a tackle yet and kind of, you know, get a free run at a quarterback, or at least, you know, force a guy out. And on the other side, whether it's Cleveland Farrell or Luvu lining up there, you know, you need more pressure across the front. And the D-tackles are the guys that are easy to focus on because they are, you know, the named players. But those DNs have to do a better job of getting after him as well. And if they're able to start getting pressure on a quarterback, and to me, I would start bringing extra guys to make that happen. You're going to help your guys on the outside because they don't have to cover so long.
They are. The problem is right now, because teams feel like this, the Giants basically were like, we're not going to give up sacks because we know that if we give our guys time downfield, they're going to get open. And there was like 7-man pros. And so Allen's trying to beat a double team. Payne's trying to beat a double team. Dorrance Armstrong's got a tight end, but the running back's over there, so he's facing a double team. And it's like, well, okay, who's got a one-on-one? We got one guy with a one-on-one, and that guy's facing a pretty good tackle. Like, yikes, that's a tough look. And so eventually, like, it is a chicken and egg thing, Mitch, where I'm just like, I don't know which one's going to have to crack first, but something's going to have to crack because the way the coverage and the rush marry right now is not a very good marriage. And until that becomes a healthy relationship, if you will, I think this defense is going to struggle on some level against the pass. We'll talk about it more, obviously, after we see what Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase do to it. Oh, yay. That's next Monday night. Mitch and JP have a bunch of pods. Before then, they'll do their instant reaction show after and all the deals you can look forward to from the Beltway Football Podcast, not only in a podcast feed, Mitch, but on television or in the Monumental app on video. You guys got all kinds of stuff happening.
Yeah, listen, Saturdays and Sundays, you have a pregame show that airs on Monumental Sports Network on TV. And then Sundays after the games, catch us live on the app, on the website. We're doing our postgame pods live on TV, tons of graphics and video, really cool stuff, and you get to get instant reactions from us.
Love it. Very fancy. I was going to go down the Mindful Demir path, but you know what? I'm not going to do that. We're not going to do that. Mitch Tischler, everybody, check out Beltway Football Pod and all of those places we just described. And Mitch, I guess we get instant reaction style from you because you'll be on day after game next week. You get the Tuesday shift next Tuesday, except for they play on Monday. How exciting!
Yeah. I'm excited about it. I think that Monday night game is going to be quite interesting with Ja'Marr and Burrow. He's talking about teams that like to use seven-man pass pros. Yeah. You let Ja'Marr Chase run around in that secondary long enough, he's going to find a way to get open. So those guys have their hands full Monday night.
For sure, and we'll see if T. Higgins is back as well. Mitch Tischler, everybody. Thanks, buddy. Talk to you later in the week.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
That's Mitch Tischler with us here on The Hoffman Show. When we get back from one guy who talks about football on a podcast to the football podcast that I do, because on Tuesdays at 5:30, we give you the Take Command Jaden Daniels Tape Tuesday Breakdown. That is next inside the tape of how Jaden played in his second game, his first win here on The Hoffman Show.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
It's Offense Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. Let's see what the YouTube stream's doing today. People are all locked in. People liking Mitch's idea of checking in on, hey, could we see Cornelius Lucas at right tackle, potentially, and situationally, if Andrew Wiley continues to have the ups and the downs and Brandon Coleman takes over at left. So stick a pin in that. People, by the way, Anthony, very upset with Gary in Upper Marlboro.
Man, there were people calling in. Yeah. There were people that calling in just to say something about Gary. They didn't call in.
Their vibe check was hang up on Gary.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, okay. That makes me feel better that I didn't come off like a jerk. Because I feel like I needled Gary pretty good. And sometimes I'm scared that even though I might be having fun, that everyone listening isn't. But it seems like people were mad at Gary and not me. Sorry, Gary. But I'm selfish in that regard. Anyway, apropos of none of that, every Tuesday we watch the tape. We lock it in. And actually, Mondays are now. We watch the tape. And then by Tuesday, we talk about it. We being myself and Logan Paulson. And on Tuesdays here on the Hoffman Show, we make sure that you don't have to go hunting to find out what happened with Jaden Daniels. We bring it right to you. So straight from Take Command, our Take Command Tape Tuesday, Jaden Daniels breakdown here on the Hoffman Show. So that brings us to Jaden Daniels' performance, Logan. And I think that there is obviously a ton to like. He has been clearly the best of the rookie quarterbacks so far, which I think is good perspective. If you look at the struggles that Caleb has had and the struggles that Bo Nix has had. But I do think that there's like some lines of delineation starting to form and some things that I'm starting to have questions about. And the questions, to be clear, are not, can he do this? Like it's how long till he can do this. And that's in the dropback game. And so I think a lot of the questions that folks have are going to be answered as we discuss this and kind of parse this out, which is, you know, some of the red zone issues. If you need to be able to drop back and read it out and it's really, really hard in the red zone and your OC is like, I don't know if my guy's up to that, want to kind of keep the leverage down, that can be part of the reason why that happens. Why are there not as many explosive plays as maybe we expected? There's zero throws down the field, 20 plus yards in the air in this game. He did have 9 in the intermediate and he was 7 of 9 in the second half. So there is some really good stuff in that intermediate, but no big long throws down the field over the top. So what are you seeing when you watch? We'll add the rest of the offense back in the second, because there's obviously the playmaking and, you know, his job well done executing some of these box counts and things like that to make sure they're in the right place. Like, there's a lot of good stuff. But I know these are people's biggest questions. It's my biggest question of how is Jaden progressing in the dropback game? And I'm curious what you saw when you watched it.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's done a nice job this week, especially in the second half, of getting to some more of that stuff. You know, he's a young player. He's coming along. I think the one thing, if I was going to, I just would like to talk to Cliff about this, is I felt like he was very concerned. I think on the first drive, I don't think they called a true drop back at all. I think it was all screens.
I think
and
they only
RPOs.
Called like 3 in the first half.
Right. And so that is good to insulate a player, obviously, but it also makes it hard to get them in a rhythm. And so that's something, again, like that I would never have even thought about. But, you know, I'm calling plays at a high school now, and that's something that I lose sleep over, because it's like, I want you to be as comfortable as possible. I want to deleverage you as much as possible. But if I do that too much, then you never get in the flow and rhythm of a game. And so all of a sudden when we got to have it and it's a little bit high leverage, it's third and long, and that's your first throw, like throw, like reading the defense out and feeling the rush, you're not going to look very good because I haven't done a good job of integrating you. So again, I like what Cliff did, but I, you know, again, he's a smart guy. I'd like to just say, like, how do you walk that line? And I'm sure it's, he'd give me some, like, it's subjective, it depends. And that's a good answer. But that's kind of right. What I saw is I felt like they never, like he, in the first half, like there was a couple opportunities. I'll check my notes here in a second. But, you know, they run like a knife concept. So it's like a post on the left. There's a high cross by number two on the offensive right. And then a dig by number one on the offensive right. So some people would say dagger, but because of how the through is coming across, like he's in the progression as opposed to dagger where he's not. And it's Luke McCaffrey, and it's like wide open. And either that is open or the dig is open. And the rush is a little bit in the face, right? It's tight. But I think if he just kind of takes a beat and throws the football, we're okay. But that's his first true like drop back of the game. And so again, like that's a little, you got to kind of get, my question is, does he have a feel at that point? Because obviously as the game went, he grew more confident, grew more comfortable, and had an opportunity to make plays. So when I was watching Tampa Bay, I never felt like he got in that rhythm as a passer. So to me, you mentioned the 7 of 9 or whatever, the 7 completions in the second half. I thought that was really excellent to see, because he kind of had found his feet and understood what they were doing and was delivering really well-thrown footballs, obviously. So I think that's the one thing. And then in the first half, I think Cliff did a good job of calling some explosive shots down the field that the Giants just through serendipity kind of matched. Like one of my favorite concepts that they ran was they were in a 3-receiver set to the offensive right. Zach was at number 3. He runs like a deep sit. They're playing quarters coverage. That backside quarters player looks like he's getting nosy on Zach. They run a really high post across the formation, and I don't know how the safety saw it, but he saw it and is able to kind of not take the cheese with Zach, bail underneath, and then the hook player's underneath Zach. So, like, again, they did call some stuff, but I think, again, in the first half, because there wasn't a high volume of it, I think there was maybe, like you said, maybe, I don't know, total, probably 5, like, true, yeah, like, shot, drop-back type plays. And I think they did a good job matching it. And then, obviously, in the second half, we mentioned the success that they had already, so.
Yeah, I thought the sequence around the play where he gets knocked out for the play is really interesting to look at. So, it's 8:16 to go in the second quarter. First and 10. That might have been the one you were just talking about. Actually, no, I remember that play, too, the one where McCaffrey screams open on that deeper cross. But on first and 10 on that sequence, he winds up, like, McCaffrey screams open on a crosser. And Jaden vacates a clean pocket, winds up scrambling. And, like, there's a little bit of pressure, but not NFL real, like, hey, you got to go pressure. And if he just stands there and scans across the field and Luke is wide open, you're like, hey, man, like, we got 20 yards at least on this play. So instead, he vacates the pocket, winds up scrambling, takes a hit. Second down, they called that QB draw, which that was one play that I kind of hated. It's like, hey, your dude like just got hit.
He checked to that. Jaden checked to that. So I think what he saw was, like, you have two backs in the backfield. It looked like they were in cover 2. They kind of rotate late after the check. And so there's an extra hat there. But if they kind of kept that cover 2 shell, I like the call, because then you're plus hats. So if you get it blocked up, you're running on a safety. So I do think that's, like, again, where, you know, youth of the quarterback is a little bit of an issue, right? You give them the power to kind of get you in the right look. You say, I want this play versus something very specific. It looks like that pre-snap.
Right.
Changes post-snap. And, you know, it doesn't end up looking like a great play. But if it was executed in the look you wanted, you look like a genius. You know what I mean? So right. I think there was some of that going on there, too.
Yeah, there's also just the situation, though, right, where your quarterback just took a hit and Cliff is probably not calling a play to get Jaden hit twice in a row. You know, it's kind of one of those. Because
he took a sack. It wasn't like a big hit, right? On first and 10, second 11, you're trying to get to a third manageable. Don't hate the call. And then third and 13 is where he gets hit in the ribs, right? That's the one you're talking about.
Right. Yeah. But it's the kind of thing where, like, the check comes up in a situation where that's probably not what Cliff, obviously it's not what Cliff called, because it was something that they checked to.
Right.
You know, it's like when, hey, quarterback just ran 40 yards. Let's just call a handoff. No checks here, because we don't want our guy to have to go back. Like, let's give him a snap to catch his breath kind of thing. But then the third and 13 is interesting. And then the plays after, I think, is when kind of he starts to get into the rhythm as a passer. And I think Cliff starts to give him some of those easier looks that we're talking about. The third and 13, I feel like we should talk about Logan. Like, to me, when Dan talks about Jaden the competitor, that's the embodiment. That's not the clip that you show. And not because he got hurt at the end, but it's like, he has Eckler and Ertz as checkdowns, and neither of those guys are very likely to get the first down. The most likely option to actually convert on third and 13 is Jaden running, and so he runs. And it sucks that he caught a helmet to wherever he got hit, the ribs, the gut, whatever it is that knocked the wind out of him. But it's tackle football, and sometimes that happens when guys run. But I think that it wasn't, I don't know, I don't think there was anything deeper down the field from what I saw. You can tell me if there's anything in the timing of the play that I missed. But he had Ertz, definitely could have thrown it. Had Eckler, definitely could have thrown it. Neither of those guys are probably getting more than 9 yards. It's third and 13. So he says, let's party and let's go. And then from there, when he gets back in the game, they get into some of the quick game and things like that that we can talk about. But that third and 13, like, that is why Jaden Daniels is going to be one of the reasons why Jaden Daniels is going to be a great player in this league, is because he can turn a third and 13 where there's not really anything there into a first down. And most quarterbacks can't turn third and 13 into anything anytime, anywhere.
Yeah, and I think that's what, again, that's what makes him special, you know, and I agree with you. That's like a Skinner, like double post high cross type of deal. So Terry's running a high cross. It's third and 13. So, you know, the Giants are bailing out of there. They're standing right at the sticks. And this is why you draft him second overall, or part of the reason why. And part of the reason why mobile quarterbacks are kind of becoming in vogue is because, like, that play is dead. You can check the ball down to Zach there. But I do think in terms of a person, and I think Zach had a great game, but I don't know if that's Zach's cup of tea and catching a flat and then trying to get 10 yards and making a guy miss. Like, he's excellent at running routes and making contested catches and that stuff. Like, I think Jaden's better in space at this point. So, and to your point, I think you can see him be aware, right? He's running to the first down. He checks the sticks. He kind of does like a knifing, you know, action to make sure he gets it. He does take a little bit of a shot, but that's so valuable to an offense, right? Think about if they have to punt there, right? Think about the field position game you're playing. And think about even if he got tackled short, you just flip the field by 10 yards just by doing that. So those plays are definitely going to, you know, kind of accumulate and add up over the season. You've seen them add up in the Tampa Bay game. Like, the offense was almost non-functional. A little bit of that was Jaden's fault. But, like, it's on schedule. It's on time. It's on rhythm because of his ability to do that. So I just think, like, that's something that – I think is excellent. And it's where it raises the floor of this offense tremendously. And we've talked about that a lot on this show already. So, I love that play. I think it's a great play. I think there's other plays throughout the game that mimic that same thing. And obviously it's a double-edged sword because there's times where he thinks he can make a play, ends up taking a sack. Like, you're always going to be walking that line with him, as you are with most mobile quarterbacks, is because they always think they can make a play. But I think that is a great example of elevating the floor of the offense.
No doubt. So then after that, he misses a play, obviously. He comes back in and they run on the offensive left, double slant. He hits Terry, first down. Then he misses Terry on a second and 13 against man. His feet are a mess.
Yeah.
He winds up scrambling on a first and 15 later in the drive when the tight end screen gets blown up. But they start to get to some of the, like, drop back game, rhythmic, like, let's get him going. That started the next drive. It looks like it's actually a true RPO. I wrote down RPO look because I just never know whether it's actually play action or because they do a really good job of executing. But it's the one where he drills Terry down the field, and then Allegretti for some reason is 7 yards downfield.
Like, it's an RPO, you know. Yeah. Like, that's, I was gonna say, like, if for those of you watching at home, if you want a keen trick to tell, the offensive line will tell you 9 out of 10 times they'll tell you, because they're blocking a run. So does it look like a pass? Does it look like a keeper? And that's where the RPO stuff gets a little bit interesting, right? And I'm usually, you have a call in the RPO cadence that says, hey guys, like, you can get downfield, but let's be a little bit slow. And Allegretti, like, is running it like he's running outside zone. Like, he's sprinting. So it's, like, a pretty easy call because he's blocking the linebacker before the ball is even thrown, and he's, like, 4.5 yards down the field. So, but, yeah, RPO. Offensive line, I'll tell you.
You get some RPO downfield. They ran, I think it was a Hank concept. They get the curl to Terry. And then he, on 3rd and 8 on that opening sequence, he winds up rolling out and hitting Ertz on the play. But, like, that sequence of plays, starting with the quick game, on the first play that he gets back in, that's when I think like Cliff started to unlock him and get him in a rhythm a little bit. And there are incompletions. He's got some messy footwork in some of those plays, but it felt like what you were talking about, Logan, at least to me, that he started to kind of feel the rhythm of the game. Might have taken a couple plays, but then we see his production from there, some more of those intermediate throws, some playmaking on the run, and his performance kind of takes off in conjunction with some more opportunities to be a drop back passer or to at least push the ball down the field.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, like that, to me, I mean, obviously, like the slant's nice, the Terry, the stick's nice, the Terry off the stick spacing concept. You mentioned the quick game, but to me, it's the throw to Zach where he really kind of gets in a little bit of rhythm. He gets a little pressure. They're bringing what appears to be a six-man pro. They got two guys underneath and three guys deep, and he buys a little bit of time away from the unblocked rusher, really layers the throw nicely to Zach. The next play, they run that kind of fake screen takeoff to Zach, and that ball was just really well thrown and really well positioned. And then obviously there's that incompletion to Diami in the 3rd and 8 in the red zone where, you know, Brandon Coleman, who was up and down this game, gives up a pressure to Kayvon Thibodeau. There's a guy right in his face. He layers that ball right over top, and it's a little bit long, but he puts it kind of right where it needs to be. And again, you know, I'm not saying Diami needs to do this, but it'd be cool if he could have caught that and just been a little bit more aware of where he was on the field. But I think those three throws just showed like an accuracy and anticipation that we've seen him have in practice. But like you said, it kind of gets him going in the rhythm of the game, which is nice to see because then he ends up making some big throws later also.
One question I did have on Jaden with the footwork, because it felt like it was super messy at times, but I'm also cognizant of something that you've said and it's ringing in my head, which is you're not 100% on some of the timing of Cliff's offense in terms of the dropbacks and the footwork, and you're obviously super familiar with it in the West Coast stuff, and that's what I've watched most of my career covering the league. So like obviously there's that what was it, the miss to Terry where it, like Terry kind of dives outside, he gets both hands on it, but it's a really difficult catch,
right?
Like clearly the footwork on the actual throw portion, that was off because he's like lunging into that throw. But there's some other dropbacks that feel a little rushed at times. Is that him being sped up? Is that actually what this offense looks like? Like what's your feel on that with whatever you know about this offense at this point?
I don't know about all of them, but on that one to Terry specifically, that's just a simple stick. That's like in every offense in the NFL. And I think he did a really good job. You read the stick, it's dead. You get to over the ball, it's dead. So I like it. But then there's a little bit of a gap in the line, and that's where, again, like this is something he's got to figure out for himself. Like, when can I be patient, like, and feel the rush, and when can I run? And so he, to me, is like, I'm to Terry, and for whatever reason, I think the gap kind of catches his eye, and he's like, I can run. But he's like, oh no, Terry's open. So he's like going to run, and then kind of like is off of a weird base and tries to throw it. So to me, I thought that was a really good example of like, hey man, like great balance, great footwork in the pocket. Like, just finish the throw. You know what I mean? Like, throw the ball. And that is something I can't imagine how challenging that is for Cliff to negotiate. It's because, like, what makes you really good and makes you really dangerous is your ability to run. But I want you to be dangerous as a thrower, too, which we saw more this game, which I appreciate. But, like, these are the times where it's like you still see, like, I was trying to think of a way to quantify it. It's like you see kind of like you see an increase in efficiency, right, from the offense from him as a passer. But there's still these decisions where it's like, oh, that decision on the RPO could have been a little bit cleaner. The decision on the zone read could have been cleaner. That decision to stay in the pocket and throw the football could have been cleaner. That decision to throw the football away. And so I think as he continues to improve, some of that offensive efficiency we talked about in the red zone specifically will also augment too. So that's something that I'm excited about because, again, he improved a lot from week one to week two, but there's still some of those things where you're like, we can just sharpen this up a little bit, and it's going to get sharper the more NFL defense you see.
Right. It's also going to fluctuate week to week. You know, the simplicity of the Giants defense probably helps compared to the complexity of Tampa's. Lou Anarumo, it's pretty freaking good as defensive coordinator in Cincinnati. Yeah. They do some fun stuff. So that we'll see how that goes. But, you know, then you got like Cleveland, like they're nasty. That's going to be really difficult. And what I like, though, is Cliff clearly understands that he has to insulate his rookie, not because his rookie's not really good, but it's because he's still a rookie. And I think that's the thing that I ultimately come out of this game with Jaden is going, man, there is so much to like. Yes, the floor of the offense is super high. When things break down, he can make stuff happen because he is a special athlete. Cliff understands, hey, I'm going to have to, you know, throw a lot of these screens because there is a leverage thing. But hey, maybe eventually I need to let him go a little bit to get into a rhythm. And it's there's not going to ever be a point where they figure it out and it clicks and he's going to be perfect every game because that's not how the NFL works. But right. Seeing progress week over week, I think you have to be happy through 2 weeks of Jaden Daniels and really hopeful because I think a lot of the stuff that within the vacuum of the game didn't go well is our distinct growth opportunities that I think we're excited to watch him grow with.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing I keep coming back to. It's like, you know, every test he's taken, he's improved, right? So last week to this week, first week to training camp, they're all kind of progressing. And so that's the thing that's encouraging to me is if he was kind of staying the same as week one and, you know, kind of, and again, it's only two games, so I'm going to pump my brakes on that too. But if he kind of looked like Caleb Williams where the mistakes aren't getting corrected, there's not kind of an improvement, I'd be a little bit nervous, quite honestly. So I think nervous is maybe the wrong word. I'd just be like, oh, we got to like kind of find a way to get him comfortable. And so I think, like you said, Cliff's done a good job of getting him comfortable. He seems to be improving week on week, which is important. Obviously, this week against Cincinnati is going to be its own ball of wax. So, you know, head on a swivel there. But I'm generally encouraged. And I think there's like been this kind of crazy overreaction to him, you know, like not being perfect all the time. And I think you hit the nail on the head there. Like, he's a rookie quarterback in a very complicated, and I think this is another thing that we haven't really talked about on this show, but it is 100% true. Like, offensive scoring's down, offensive touchdowns are down, offensive first downs are down. This is the year of the defense, and defenses are kind of starting to figure offenses out. So, like, I think if you look across the league and not just focus on the Commanders, you'll see that there's a pretty drastic difference between, you know, like, defense from 5 years ago and now in terms of how productive and effective they're being.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey. See ya.